Support for this podcast comes from San Francisco International Airport. At SFO, you can discover award-winning flavors and unique shops all before takeoff. Learn more about what's at SFO at flysfo.com.
Hi there. I'm Rand Abdelfattah from Throughline. If you're listening to this podcast, you know that KQED produces exceptional storytelling that keeps you informed, inspired, and entertained. Their podcasts cover issues from your neighborhood to the entire country and everything in between. Support this work today.
You can help us continue to bring quality podcasts to your ears. Just head to donate.kqed.org/podcast. That's donate.kqed.org/podcast.
From KQED.
I'll have to tell my kids because every time they say, they're like, oh, it's a robot car!
This is Political Breakdown from KQED in San Francisco. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. Today on The Breakdown, well, despite bumps in the road, literally and politically, autonomous vehicles, cars, and trucks continue expanding their reach, even as critics, including organized labor, regulators, and some local governments say, not so fast. Several bills are being heard in Sacramento related to driverless vehicles, so we've invited KQED Transportation Editor Dan Brecky to join us to talk about that, plus this week's protester shutdown of Bay Area bridges and highways and the impact on commuters, and the overall kind of make-it-or-break moment facing public transit in this post-pandemic moment. Dan Brecky, welcome back to Political Breakdown.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So why don't we just begin with big picture? Give us a sense of where is the driverless vehicle technology and the industry here in California?
Well, it's here to stay, and it is spreading. The most concrete sign is that Waymo, which has been operating solely in San Francisco and carrying paying passengers, has been given permission to extend its service all the way down the peninsula, sort of everything from Interstate 280 and east, and then also into Los Angeles County. The entire city of Los Angeles and all the adjoining communities there, of which there are many. And beyond the Waymo, which is the only operating passenger service at this point, because Cruise, the GM-owned company that ran into trouble in San Francisco and lost its permits, they're still having to establish their ability to get back on the streets here in San Francisco. There are also some delivery services out there, and there are other services that are testing vehicles and are getting ready to try to go where Waymo and Cruise have gone.
And so when you say given permission, this is by the state, right? We'll get into that in a minute.
Correct.
But can you just lay out what's the safety record? You mentioned Cruise's problems. They hit a pedestrian and dragged them and then weren't fully upfront about it, right, to regulators. But what else have we seen out there?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Waymo has put out a lot of data and statistical studies that purport to show that it's safer than any technology that's ever been invented anywhere, including aspirin tablets. That's a little facetious, but the caveat with their research is that it is not peer-reviewed. And on the other hand, or am I on a third hand now? I think one of the most significant things you have to look at is the company is operating, and it has no fatalities on its record. Okay, so
we can verify that,
right? that is significant, and that's the first thing that
because
company will point to.
Let's be clear: people kill pedestrians every day
all
in America.
Time.
No, that's right, and there are more than 40,000 people who died in traffic collisions in the United States, more than 4,000 in California last year, and so it's a huge and very serious issue. Now, people who look at these companies very closely point out that really, as impressive as the number of miles Waymo has operated, for instance, and it's approaching 10 million miles, it's really not enough to have a robust sense. And that's 10 million miles here in San Francisco.
So a specific type of driving.
Yeah. So it's not enough to really know what what their true safety record will be. And that's what we want to know.
And just to be clear, they've only gotten permission to drive on city streets, not on the freeways. Is that correct?
They have permission to drive up to 65 miles an hour on freeways, but they have been holding back from doing that. They're being very deliberate about using that ability.
Why do you think that is? Is that they don't trust their own technology, or they just don't, you know, they want to make sure they get it right?
Well, look, I have not asked them, so I'm just going to give you an educated guess. I think if you look at the way Waymo in particular has rolled out its technology, it's being cautious. And, you know, going up, you know, Bryant Street here in front of KQED is a whole lot different from going up or down US 101, which is just a couple blocks away. And I think that's widely recognized. And I assume, if it hasn't been rolled out yet, that it's because they don't feel it's quite ready.
Hmm. So we have a number of attempts at the state level to try to regulate these self-driving vehicles. One of them was vetoed last year, but has come back. This would require a human in a truck that weighs more than 10,000 pounds, right? We've also seen Assemblymember Matt Haney from San Francisco author a bill that would require more public reporting of the operations of these folks. Like, largely, can you talk a little bit about, you know, why Newsom vetoed that and kind of where you see this regulatory attempt going?
Well, the Newsom administration was very open as that trucking bill made its way through the legislature last year that it didn't like it. You know, the bill actually got incredible levels of support in the legislature. It passed with huge margins in both houses. But the Newsom administration's position, and there's no sign it's changed this year, is that they don't feel that this is necessary and that it would hurt the state's competitive position in terms of developing this technology and deploying.
Not necessary meaning what exactly? That it would stifle innovation, or we're not at the point yet? And this bill that's now come back is essentially the same thing, right?
Right. I believe it's word for word the same bill, and it's sort of
and it goes out 5 years. That's what it
yes,
would
exactly. So if it passes this year and was enacted, you'd have to have human safety operators on the trucks through 2029 or 2030. And this is something, of course, that the Teamsters is very interested in, and they're really the ones behind this bill. They're very concerned about job losses, but they're also concerned about the capacity for an out-of-control autonomous truck to wreak havoc on the highway.
Want to quickly ask you about the protests this week, the Gaza protests on the Golden Gate Bridge and on 880. Big traffic tie-up. Bridget, traffic came to a standstill. Do you have any sense of how that affected commuters or some of the public transit agencies in the Bay Area?
Well, Golden Gate Transit's bus service was definitely disrupted by that. And of course, people traveling by car across the bridge were impacted. And then, you know, Interstate 880, a.k.a. the Nimitz Freeway through Oakland, was very seriously affected for many hours by the protests, because the protests were actually very determined and ingenious in creating a situation with the use of devices. We were talking about this earlier. What do you call them?
Sleeping dragons.
That that made it very difficult to remove them. And the CHP, which has an extraction team, had to move very deliberately to try to get people off there safely.
And the focus of main concern really was emergency vehicles being delayed, right?
Right. When there was a similar protest on the Bay Bridge last year during the APEC summit, there was a vehicle transporting transplant organs across the Bay Bridge that got tied up. And so that has, and that when we see these kinds of protests, and there have been many over the last decade, when we see these kind of protests, the effect on emergency vehicles is always the thing that's brought up.
Yeah. And of course, that has to be the top concern is people's life and emergencies, personal or medical, otherwise. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, more of our conversation about all things transportation, including layoffs at Tesla and what it says about the state of the electric vehicle market. You're listening to Political Breakdown. I'm Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. We'll be right back.
I'm Sasha Coca, host of the California Report magazine. every week, we bring you stories about what connects us in the giant, diverse Golden State. Because what happens in California changes the world.
I love this place. We were once seen as like the place to be, California. The land of milk and honey. That's where you go to Sunshine State. But we just have challenges right now.
KQED's California Report Magazine. New episodes drop every Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Avery Trufelman, host of Articles of Interest. And I've got to say, I've been a fan of KQED ever since I was a little kid. And I would come out to San Francisco to visit my grandma. It was just what we'd always turn on every time we got in the car, every time we were making dinner and turning on the radio. It was always KQED. And then over the years, I've become a massive fan of KQED podcasts because this is local reporting at its best. These are answers to questions you've always wanted to know, interviews with exciting, unusual voices, necessary journalism, all told with love and care and artistry. And did you know that a majority of KQED's funding actually comes from members? It's just people like you and me supporting the programs they love, while also getting access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. If you want to sign up and be a part of this amazing community, visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to become a member today. That's podcasts with an S. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
And welcome back to Political Breakdown. Scott Schaefer here with Marisa Lagos. We're talking with KQED's transportation editor, Dan Brecky. Before the break, Dan, we were talking about autonomous vehicles and trucks. Obviously, they're not operating, I think, in California, right? But they are operating in some states, or at least one state, right?
Texas and Arizona, I think, both have autonomous trucks, autonomous semis, and they've been tried out other places with human safety operators aboard. So this is another place where, you know, there's a guy named Anthony Lewandowski who got in a lot of trouble for leaving Google and going to Uber and allegedly taking some trade secrets with him related to developing autonomous trucking and autonomous vehicles in general. And he was working for a company for a while called Otto, which I think almost, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago, did a demonstration of this kind of autonomous semi operation in Colorado. It involved a beer truck traveling from a brewery to Colorado Springs. Kind of exciting. And so this is something that the trucking industry, which is facing a labor shortage, is really interested in and is considered to be a real opportunity for expanding the technology.
What is the role of the safety driver? I mean, do they have a break, or what can they do if there's like a sudden emergency?
Well, it's analogous to what most of the autonomous vehicle companies have had to do to get on the road in the first place. So each of them have started with autonomous vehicle technology that, in theory, can guide a vehicle safely through the streets. But they've had a human on board to intervene if something goes wrong. And that's what the human safety operator is about.
So, I mean, the Teamsters are sponsoring this bill to require human operators at least for 5 years. And obviously for them, this is a question of jobs. I mean, safety is one of the big sort of arguments being made. But I can't help but think about what happened when we saw Uber and Lyft roll out and the taxi industry was just decimated. And you suddenly had all these medallion holders, maybe, you know, in debt hundreds of thousands of dollars for something that was overnight kind of
worthless,
right? So is there a commonality there? Because you talk about, you know, this job shortage or this trucker shortage. Do they have that same kind of investment as individuals? Like, how is that kind of part of this play out?
Well, I think they do. I mean, you know, when you watch the hearings in Sacramento, you know, there are always a lot of Teamsters members who are talking about the years they've spent on the road. And look, it's a real thing. That's a career that is sort of legendary in American transportation. I think there is concern that people are going to just get shoved out of jobs with, you know, with no compensation at all and no real other career to look forward to. And I think that's, you know, trucking obviously isn't the only industry where, you know, something like artificial intelligence or this autonomous technology is seen as a threat to human jobs. But I think you're also bringing up something about the way this is regulated. on a state level, that's actually a pretty big issue, which is, you know, the state has adopted regulations for things like how autonomous vehicles are going to be rolled out. For instance, the Department of Motor Vehicles is responsible for certifying their safety and giving them permission to operate in certain what they call operating domains. And, you know, the problem with that kind of regulation has been that the places where the vehicles are actually operating, for instance, San Francisco, where we've seen a lot of this, don't really have much of a say so far in what the what the companies are doing.
Yeah, and I remember Mayor London Breed a couple of years ago saying she didn't want the streets of San Francisco to be kind of a laboratory for this kind of technology, but that's kind of what they've become, and it's got to be very frustrating to local governments because they don't have control. And coming back to, you know, Marisa's point about Lyft and Uber, I remember we had, the city didn't even know how many of those cars were out there because they wouldn't tell them.
That's right. I mean, at one point, there were some researchers who very ingeniously figured out that they could sort of hack the apps that the companies were using to sort of figure out exactly how many miles they were driving and how many trips they were doing. And it was shocking to see just how much they had taken over the transportation network.
But I mean, okay, so we have a couple other bills, one by Matt Haney of San Francisco that would require these companies to report things like collision and traffic violations, which I just editorially want to say it's kind of insane that they don't have to already. And then one in the Senate 915 by Senator Dave Cortese of San Jose, I believe, who would say would require more local control over these things. Talk about the prospects of those and like what's the argument against them? Like, why shouldn't a city have a say in this or have more data about what they're doing?
Well, SB 915 you're talking about from Dave Cortese would allow local jurisdictions to create a permit structure for autonomous vehicle services like Waymo. Won't require them. That's actually so he's backtracked a little bit because when the bill was first dropped, it would have required a local okay for that to happen. I think, you know, the objections that the industry have raised about all these autonomous vehicle bills is that it will stifle innovation and that the technology is safer. And if, you know, they dismiss any arguments about safety, saying, look, if the world you like is the one that we're living in with all these people being killed on the roads, then fine. But that's our technology is much safer and will really improve it. And the other thing is, I think there's a concern about creating a kind of a hodgepodge of regulation from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. But there are things in this bill that I think would answer that concern.
You know, we did see, we alluded earlier, the Cruise lost its license. It was revoked by the state after it, you know, had that accident with a pedestrian and wasn't transparent. Right. Do you think that Waymo and these other companies that are working on autonomous trucks and so on, what did they learn from that? I mean, you said, for example, Waymo is reluctant to take advantage of that ability to go 65 miles an hour until they want to, you know, they want to get it right. I mean, do you think that the industry has, you know, really taken what happened to Cruise to heart?
Well, I think you would think that they have to, right? Just from the standpoint that Cruise seemed to be on a trajectory of very aggressive expansion, and there was nothing standing in their way until one of their cars ran over somebody in downtown San Francisco. And then they were not as forthcoming as they might have been with state regulators and the police and everybody else. And look, these companies have put a tremendous amount of money on the line to get these cars on the street. So it just is common sense to one of the things they have to do to protect that investment is to be careful. And in terms of being transparent, look, I'm not a fan or a non-fan. You know, I'm not a hater on the autonomous vehicle companies, and I'm not a promoter of their wonderful technology either. But one thing that I saw with Waymo fairly recently was the other side of Potrero Hill here, one of their cars struck a bicyclist at an intersection, and they were all over the place trying to tell the media what exactly had happened. Now, they use odd, non-intuitive phrases to describe.
A tech company shocking.
Was it caught on video?
I don't believe it was caught on video. I never saw a video of it. It would have been because the car has video, but I don't think the video has ever become available. But just the way they responded to that, the way they were so proactive, and you're used to sort of getting the finger or something like that from some of these tech companies when you make a media inquiry.
No, they probably learned from Cruz's mistakes.
Well, I think they probably did. Oh, look, I mean, you know, I'm a little sensitive about people not
getting the finger.
Yeah, I don't like it. No, you want people to be straightforward with you. Yeah. And I was impressed by how quickly they were getting back to people on that.
Yeah, and arguably, I mean, that's their responsibility. They are asking us to use the public right away and roll out a new technology. And
I mean, tech is kind of famous for, like, ask forgiveness, not
break
permission,
it
and, break it fast forward, all that, fail fast.
Fail fast, fail forward.
But just don't kill anybody.
Fail up, fail down.
Well, let's transition to another company that has... Well, I won't even characterize Tesla. We saw Elon Musk come out and say that they are going to lay off at least 10% of its worldwide workforce. I don't think we know yet how this will affect the Bay Area locations.
Right.
But this seems to be kind of a bigger moment of challenge for the electric vehicle industry. Can you just talk about, like, why we think Tesla is having this contraction and if it tracks? Is it about, I mean, Elon Musk is obviously a very singular and controversial figure, but it seems like there's some warning signs that go beyond just Tesla.
Well, look, I think electric vehicle sales, there's been some softness in it. You could look at a number of reasons why that is. I mean, the cars are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
They're more expensive than buying a conventional, gas-fueled car or even a hybrid.
And some of the tax
challenge.
Credits are going away,
right,
too.
And, right, and there's not the incentives are not as much, or they've been shifted, or they're just going away.
And there's challenges with long-distance driving and things like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And, you know, people who went through the winter in Chicago and their Teslas were
right.
very unhappy to find out what would happen when the temperature stayed below zero for 2 or 3 days in a row. I mean, so there are all these challenges out there. But the other thing that's happening is there's a lot more competition, and there's more competition coming. I mean, a lot of the European companies and American companies have electric vehicles on the road. China, although whether we'll see those here
right.
is another question.
Well, and they're heavily subsidized by the government, right?
Right,
and
right.
Is there a chance, do you think, that the Biden administration or whatever administration will just say, you can't sell those here?
Well, they're under pressure to keep them out.
I know the Europeans are a little freaked out about it.
Well, you know, I don't know specifics, but the word on the street is that these cars from China are very advanced in their capabilities. And, I think that's one of the reasons that the competing car makers are concerned about it. They're going to be pushed into a non-competitive situation before they're even close to ready for it.
Coming back to transportation, public transportation, Scott Wiener is seeking to put on the ballot, I think, in 2026 in all the Bay Area counties, a regional tax that would be used mostly or at least in part for public transportation. Like, what is the state post-pandemic right now of public transit? How are they doing?
Well, they're not doing great.
I mean, ridership's going back up, though, right?
Ridership is sort of crawling back up.
Depends on the system, too,
yeah.
right?
Well, it does. I mean, for instance, SMART in the North Bay, Sonoma, Marin area, rapid transit, or rail transit. Okay, ding me for that. You know, they have been boasting that they are actually ahead of their pre-pandemic ridership. Well, the caveat there is, I mean, it's true.
It was pretty low to begin with.
Yes, it was very low to begin with, and they carry a relatively small group of people. BART is kind of stuck in the low 40% range, a 40 to 45% range in terms of returning riders. And, you know, Muni is doing a little better. AC Transit is doing a little better. But the reality is for all of these agencies, regardless of where ridership is going right now, whether it's gaining fast or slow, they are all facing a fiscal crisis that's going to hit in 2 years. This fiscal cliff idea that was, you know, became sort of a popular phrase a year or two ago. I mean, that is still a very real threat. And that's that's what's behind this legislation you're talking about from Senator Wiener, SB 1031, which will you know, sort of describe what will be on the ballot before voters.
And that would have to pass in every, was it 9 counties in the Bay Area?
Well, the way these things have gone before is that it's a collective 9-county vote. Now,
so like a majority total of all the votes in all the counties.
Yeah, and there are lots of uncertainties about that because a tax measure might need a 2/3 majority. If it's a tax measure, if it's defined as a tax measure, it will need a 2/3 majority under current law. That could change. The law could change. It's probably not likely to between now and then. The other possibility is that the backers of this might try to do individual initiatives in all 9 counties. So it would be a county-by-county vote.
Hmm. Which is what they did with BART decades ago, right?
They did. When BART started in 1962, what we now call the BART counties, Alameda, San Francisco, and Contra Costa, all held separate votes.
Marin famously opted out.
They backed out. San Mateo County backed out, and that's why we're stuck where we are today. but as to this vote, I mean, one of the things, if it was done on a county by county basis. One of the things that you have to note is that Contra Costa and Solano counties have not been jumping on board very enthusiastically with the last few transportation measures they've been asked to pass. Even San Francisco voters didn't pass. Now, it needed a supermajority, but there was a tax measure recently that that failed. And so, you know, it's a crapshoot. Whether people will... you know, approve a tax. We still don't know what kind of tax it would be. It could be some form of property tax or sales tax or income tax. Income tax, I guess, has been taken off the board. But anyway, we don't know what kind of tax, and we don't know what people's true level of enthusiasm for it is.
Before we let you go, one change coming to San Francisco streets will be these cameras that will catch speeders and issue tickets. When are we going to see those rolled out? And what are there civil liberties concerns still about that kind of technology?
Well, I think anytime you put cameras that might be able to identify individual people on the street, I think there's civil liberties concerns. The way this system has been crafted is to minimize any kind of privacy intrusion. I mean, what we're going to capture when these cameras are operational, and that will be sometime early next year, is license plates, right? And so, you know, individual faces and other identifying features apart from the vehicle itself are not supposed to be captured. There are going to be rules about, you know, how long the data can be retained and who has access to it. You know, this is all something that the San Francisco Board of Supervisors still has to approve. If they do, the SFMTA, Municipal Transportation Agency Board, has already approved it. If the Board of Supervisors approves it, then 33 speed cameras will be purchased, a contractor will be hired, and we'll see this on the street soon.
I mean, it does feel like the conversation over this has changed significantly over the past decade or so. I feel like we had a lot of pushback at the Board of Supervisors, for example, around any surveillance surveillance technology. And it does feel like people are both, I think, worried about traffic safety, but also we all have phones tracking us constantly.
Well, that's true.
There is no privacy.
Yeah. Well, and the one thing that's, you know, you didn't mention here is that people's perception of how unsafe the streets are has changed dramatically. I mean, San Francisco has been in the middle of this Vision Zero effort for 10 years now, and does not seem to have made much progress in terms of reducing deaths and injuries. Mm. And enforcement is seen as a key element of really improving safety on the
streets. We've had these red light cameras for decades now in San Francisco and other cities in California. Do you have any sense what impact they've had on pedestrian safety or anything else?
I think they've made a lot of drivers poorer.
Poorer? Oh,
well,
less money.
Yeah.
Not poor drivers, but like...
No. I think those have been criticized in a lot of places for being... intended to be cash cows.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of them have been deactivated across the state. So this speed enforcement, automated speed enforcement technology is sort of the next wave. And I just want to note, I just came back from a couple weeks in Chicago. Chicago has a really robust system. Some people feel like it's really overreach, but every school and every park in the city has speed cameras adjacent to them. And if you go more than 5 miles an hour over the speed limit, you're going to get a ticket. Now, they're not, you know, life-altering tickets. I think they're $35 on the first pass if you're only going 6 miles an hour over the speed limit. But
which seems more reasonable, right? I think I was saying this to you guys before, but as a parent in an urban city, like, that is my biggest concern is speeding cars and people blowing through stop signs and stop lights.
And old school speed bumps can help with that.
Yeah. And other things.
Yeah. But... and, you know, there's a another bill in the legislature right now to, you know, change school speed zones from 25 to 20 miles an hour and have more expansive hours for them. This is directly related to the concern you're raising, which is traffic fatalities are one of the leading causes of deaths among school-aged children in California.
And it does and seem like, you know, I think we think of main boulevards and thoroughfares as really dangerous, but like I live in the south side of the city. You see people flying down the Excelsior District, Ocean, you know, like
making right-hand turns without looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, Dan Brecky, thanks for joining us. I wasn't sure we'd have enough to talk about for 25 minutes,
but we could
keep going.
No, exactly. Just warming up.
All right. KQED's transportation editor, Dan Brecky. Thanks so much. And that is a wrap for Wednesday, April 17th. Political Breakdown is a production of KQED. Our engineer is Syl Muller. Our producer is Juan Carlos Lara. For Marisa Lagos and all of us here at KQED, I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Glenn Washington from Snap Judgment. And if you love what you're hearing, and I know you love what you're hearing, please consider becoming a KQED member. You get special access to cool events, behind-the-scenes footage, and so much more. Plus, you'll sleep better at night knowing you did your part for the community you depend upon. It's in you. Please be in it. Visit donate.kqed.org/podcasts to sign up now. That's podcast with an S. Thanks.